Translation. Sukadev Goswami continues speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. My dear king, sleep is exactly like a python. Those who wander in the forest of material life are always devoured by the python of sleep. Being bitten by this python, they always remain in the darkness of ignorance. They are like dead bodies thrown in a distant forest. Thus the conditioned souls cannot understand what is going on in life. Commentary by Srila Prabhupada. Material life means being fully absorbed in eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Out of these, sleep is taken very seriously. While asleep, one completely forgets the object of life and what to do. For spiritual realization, one should try to avoid sleep as much as possible. The Goswamis of Vrindavan practically did not sleep at all. Of course, they slept some, for the body requires sleep, but they slept only about 2 hours, and sometimes not even that. They always engaged in spiritual cultivation, nidrahara vihara kari vijito. Following the footsteps of the Goswamis, we should try to reduce sleeping, eating, mating, and defending. Om agyan timurandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam jaina tasmai shri guru namaha bukam karoti vachalam pongum langayate girim Yatrapatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinataranam Mukam Karoti Bachalam Ongum Langayate Girim Yatrapatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinataranam Shri Rupa Shri Sanatana Bhattaraguna Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Dasaraguna Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dharati Swapanantikam Namo Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurutvishe Namaha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Inabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tavasmi Radhika Nata Karmana Manasagira. Krishna Kante Tavai Vasmi Upamehi Bhagatir Mama. Govinda Valavedadhe Parteye Tvamaham Sada. Tvadiya Iti Janatu Govindo Mam Dvayasaha. Radhe Vrindavanadishe Karuna Mritavahini Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyam Mahyam Pradiyatam Tavai Vasmi Tavai Vasmi Najivami Tvayavina Iti Vidyaya Devi Tvam Nayamam Charanantikam Panchakalpatarubhyascha Prabhasindubhyayvacha Atithanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So in these verses, we continue to hear of the forest of material enjoyment, but what's been, the code has been broken, so to speak. Of course, Prabhupada's already broken the code for us. Earlier, Bharat Maharaj, Jad Bharat, sorry, speaks metaphorically to the king. So he describes a forest where there's a wanderer, where there are mountains, where there are pebbles, where there are pythons, and so on and so forth. And then later on, it's kind of like a metaphor, so you don't exactly know what it's all about. Of course,
course we do. Prabhupada gives us purport, so breaks the code for us straight away. But in these subsequent verses, then the metaphor is explained. And so here, earlier, the forest has been described as a place where there are pythons, and one becomes devoured by a python. And so Sukadeva Goswami is saying the python is asleep. Wanderers in the material, in the forest of material enjoyment, can be swallowed up by a python. Some pythons are very, very large, and they swallow their prey whole. Smaller pythons, they will swallow whole, you know, frogs or rats or whatnot. But larger ones, they swallow whole animals. It's quite phenomenal how they're able to do, how material nature facilitates them in doing that. I'm thinking of a gory story, but considering whether to tell it or not.
No.
Don't. Okay. I'm seeing Sudhi, so Sudhi's impelling me to tell the story. Mayapur Gurukul, many, many years ago, I was a child. The boys caught a snake somehow or other, and one of the boys started swinging it around his head. Not sure if it was a cobra or a python, or it was a dangerous snake. And you know, the tough Bengali village boys, they weren't afraid of, you know, these things. So he's swinging this frog around his head, and a python around his neck, around his head like this, and, you know, some animals started falling out of his mouth. So I hesitated to tell the story. So these large snakes, they're able to swallow animals whole, or even humans. And so here Parikkhita Maharaj is saying that those pythons, how they can devour their prey whole, is how sleep can devour us in our lives. We become overcome by sleep and completely surrounded by it, and we lose consciousness in sleep. And in that way, we lose the great treasure of human life. Prahlad Maharaj says that 50% of life is wasted in sleeping. He's trying to encourage his wife, you know, his friends at school, take up Krishna consciousness. They say, Prahlad, we're just five. We've got a long life ahead of us. We'll take up Krishna consciousness when we're big, when we're older. For the time being, let's be boys, let's play. And Prahlad Maharaj says, yeah, you say you will, you know, you've got something to do now and you'll take up Krishna consciousness later in life, but when will you have time? When will the right time appear? Now, as boys, you want to play, then as teenagers, you'll be interested in other things. You become interested in girls. And then as a young adult, you're concerned about maintaining, getting money to maintain a family. And then, later on in life, there are other concerns that arise. Your health starts to dwindle. Your grandchildren arrive, and so on and so forth. And so in this way, you will go through an entire life always thinking that now I have something more important to do and I'll be Krishna conscious later. Prahlad Maharaj says, aside from that, 50% of your life is taken up for sleep. And so, better right now, while you're five, komara majarat pragnyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabham manusanjanma tarabhyat dhruvamartadam. Says, this human form of life is achieved as a very rare gift. There are millions and millions of living entity, different varieties of life, 8,400,000 according to the Vedic version. And so this human form is very rare. So while you have it, make the most of it. Don't put it off, don't delay. Right now, the tender age of five, Kumara. Kumara means five-year-old, that age group. You should begin to practice Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Dharma, specifically, he says, Bhagavad Dharma. The proper translates it as Krishna consciousness. Bhagavat is Krishna, Dharma, religion, it's the highest religious practice. Prabhupada here is saying that, you know, the living entities engage in four activities: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And then he says, amongst these four, sleep is very prominent. Prahlad Maharaj says 50% of life. Elsewhere, Prabhupada explains how these activities are common to all living entities. Whether you're human or animal or insect or reptile, you will engage in eating, sleeping, reproduction, and defense. So it's nothing so wonderful. We glamorize it in human society. You can eat fast food, or you can, you know, lay out a good spread. You can go to an expensive restaurant. The activity is the same. The same with reproduction. Animals are reproducing, they're mating. In human society, we, especially Western civilization, but not only, sex is very much glamorized in our culture. It's all around you in advertising, in literature, in music. Sex is all pervading. It has been, very much glamorized in our society. Similarly with defending, the Aboriginals or the indigenous people of different cultures, they defend with a spear or a club or a boomerang. Not sure if they use them for defense, maybe more for hunting. But. And in our modern society, we have become very sophisticated in our defense. How much of the national budget is spent on defense? It's a major portion of a national budget goes towards defense. During the Cold War, between the USSR and the United States, I don't know if it was 40% or more of the national budgets, 60% of the national budget was going to defense. So how prominently it features in our society. That was then, the Cold War. Now we have hot wars all over the world. War has exploded all throughout the Middle East. So we have become very sophisticated in our defending. But Prabhupada makes the point, Aristotle makes the point as well, the Greek philosopher. Humans are engaging in these activities, animals do them as well. There's nothing so great about it. Even if you make it very sophisticated and glamorized, what's the real difference? And so these philosophers, transcendentalists, they explain that, in fact, different living entities, they are more suited to these activities. They are endowed, specifically endowed with bodies that are very proficient in these activities. In terms of sleeping, then the bear is the bear is very well equipped in this regard. They can sleep, hibernate for 6 months at a time. How good is that? for mating, the pigeon is given as an example. They have sex many times in a day. Who's counting? Anyway. Or even the pig or the dog, the monkey, there's no real social restraints on you know, how they, you know, where they mate, when they mate, with whom they mate. You see it a lot in India, the monkeys and the dogs, just first introductions, and you know, they begin the mating activity of mating. So a lot more sexual freedom. We had our sexual revolution in the 1960s in the West, where people felt sexually free. Then we got AIDS. But which greatly curbed those activities. People got really scared. But the animals are a lot more free sexually. In terms of defense, the tiger, the lion, they're much more well endowed with teeth and claws, physical strength than we. And so Aristotle explains in his writings how different things or different living entities, they have their proper use, their proper function. They're equipped with certain facilities, with certain gifts, and they have their, for a bird to fly. Now, that is the, you know, the full expression of what it means to be a bird. A bird that doesn't, well, you get kiwis and emus that don't fly, but generally speaking, a bird expresses its nature as a bird by flying. And Aristotle, he explains different animals in this way, but then also even inanimate things. Inanimate, non-living objects, they also have their proper function. A telephone is to be used for communicating. Well, now it's used for all kinds of things. But traditionally, a telephone, the purpose of a telephone is communication. And if it's not used for that, and it's not a smartphone, then it's not fulfilling its function. It's just sitting there in the cupboard. I have an old cell phone that sits in my cupboard at home. It's not fulfilling its purpose, just sitting there. A telephone is fulfilled when it is used to communicate with others. And so is a car. When it drives, that is the purpose of a car. A knife is for cutting. So Aristotle explains animals and things fulfilling their purpose by engaging in a specific activity. So then he comes to question, and Prabhupada makes the same argument, what is the purpose of human life? What is the unique endowment of human life that it can fulfill its purpose, its nature? And for Aristotle, it is to question, to reason. I beg your pardon? I saw lips moving. Okay, Tato Brahma Jigyasa. For Aristotle, it is to reason and to question about life itself, to question even the function of questioning. So this higher intelligence is a unique endowment of human existence. To live with purpose, to live in an ethical way. Aristotle carries the argument forward, not just to question or discuss eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He specifically refers to those activities. But to reason about higher things. And so he comes to ethics. What does it mean to live a good life? Is it a life of pleasure? And is it a life of exploitation? So the pig may be experiencing pleasure in mud, eating rubbish, in their sexual... So is a human life fulfilled in pleasure? No, it is fulfilled in conscious living, in virtuous living. And he defines virtue as the golden mean, the balance between the extreme and the deficit. The extreme is pride, and the deficit is a lack of courage or a lack of confidence. And so what is the virtue there? The virtue is... what is bravery? Cowardice. Courage. Someone can be a braggart, or they can be a coward, or they can be a person with courage. So that is a virtue, according to Aristotle. Aristotle goes through many vices classified as extremes or deficiencies in our character, and finds this balance of virtue. We have the same teaching in our... Prabhupada makes the same arguments. In terms of the virtuous life, we have the principle of sattva-guna. Sattva is a balanced state. The extreme is rajas, where we are impassioned and greedy and lusty and envious and arrogant. And the deficit is tamas, where we are stuck and depressed and we are paralyzed. We don't take action. We're afraid. Paralyzed by fear. And in between the two, we have the state of balance called sattva-guna. Sattva-guna is where we choose health, service, compassion, respect, contribution, cleanliness. Purity. These are qualities of sattva. And so that is the virtuous life that we are taught or is advocated in our scriptures. In the Bhagavad Gita, 200 verses deal with the three modes of material nature. Aristotle calls that happiness which comes from living a life of virtue as eudaimonia. It's a sustained state of peace and satisfaction. Krishna explains, when we live in the mode of goodness our happiness is sustained. Happiness and passion, it comes for a period and then quickly it dies out. We're lusty, we're greedy, we want to have, we want to possess, and when we don't get it, or we get it and it runs out of its, you know, what we were expecting from it, then there is dissatisfaction, which is tamasic, lamentation. But Prabhupada takes it further. Our acharyas, they take these arguments further. Living in sattva, that is good. Pretty much that's where, as far as Aristotle takes you. But our acharyas, our shastras, they take it further. Living sattva is good, but it's still material existence. The human life can do even more. Atato brahma jigyasa. In the human form of life, we can inquire about our spiritual nature. We can inquire about absolute spiritual truths. We can awaken spiritual consciousness. We can awaken our relationship with Krishna. That's so much more valuable. And from that perspective, even living in sattva, if it is not dedicated to Krishna, it's on the material plane. And you remain in the material condition. You remain in the cycle of birth and death, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, birth, disease, old age, and death. You retain those afflictions because in this, because we can never have pure sattva. It's always going to be mixes of rajas and tamas. These modes, they're always, Gita explains, they're always in a battle for domination. So there's always a mix, there's always a blend. So we might arrange our life in such a way that sattva dominates, but it will never be pure. Sudha sattva, pure goodness, is explained by the acharyas as Krishna consciousness. That's when you transcend the material nature altogether. Krishna's activities are sudha sattva. They are transcendent. So when sattva, when goodness, qualities of goodness, activities of goodness, Aristotle only explains the virtues themselves. The Gita is much more sophisticated, doesn't just explain qualities of character, but also classifies the things of this world. Those are the foods that are extreme. Those are the foods that are deficient. This is the music that is extreme. This is the music that is deficient. This is the trees, the animals, the everything around us. So it gives us a very practical typography, classification of things that we can bring those things of sattva into our lives. So it's much more practical than the directives, be a person of virtue, given by Aristotle, the Bhagavad Gita, which is much earlier. Krishna explains the things that you should engage with, that you should associate with, in order to develop that character of sattva. But most importantly, human life, we can inquire about the absolute truth. We can connect, we can engage in a relationship with Krishna. And so that is the real gift of human life. Not just to be sattvic, because animals, they are also, some are classified as sattvic, as an example. Cows are considered sattvic animals. They eat grass. They're very peaceful. They're not violent. Generally, we can get angry bulls. So, being able to awaken spiritual consciousness, this is uniquely human. A unique human endowment that we can comprehend and discuss Bhagavad Gita. We can discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. You don't see animals reading, discussing Bhagavad Gita. Maybe in the children's stories. But the, what was the mouse? Nimai. Nimai the mouse. Maybe in the children's stories, Nimai the mouse might reach to teach Bhagavad Gita, read Bhagavad Gita. But, yeah. So, this establishes that the real purpose of human life is to develop Krishna consciousness. That's the real purpose. Everything else is secondary. Therefore, Prabhupada says in his purport, devotees try to minimize sleeping, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. He gives the examples of the Goswamis. They sleep just 2 hours a day. Because they want to engage in the real purpose, the real value that is human life. So they minimize their sleeping to just 2 hours a day. So how do we take that example? How do we apply that? Keep matchsticks in our eyes, chant japa. Keep our eyelids open. I have seen such things. Yesterday I saw on Facebook someone had posted a picture from some earlier decades in India of a schoolboy in Madras with a rope tied from his sikha to the wall, and he's studying for an exam. So if he falls asleep, a sikha gets pulled and he's kept awake. Not really a good tactic if you deprive yourself of sleep the night before an exam. you finally get to the exam and your head's reeling and you're super tired. Not a really good tactic. But anyway, that was the photo. So it was a black and white. It was, the South Indians, they have these massive sikhas. So he had this little boy with a rope tied from a sikha to a hook on the wall. An idea, Nitai. Practice for your exams. No, better to have good sleep, good rest, and then go well rested to your exam. But it reminded me of something that I had read of a Vaishnava community called Vishnupur in West Bengal. And there was some account from several hundred years ago. It was a thriving Vaishnava community. And I was reading some account how on Ekadasi, the devotees would stay up through the night and they would have ropes. You read that? They had a rope tied from their sikhas to the roof so they could stay up all night and chant the holy names. our Goswamis don't mention that as a prescribed method. But some historical document was saying that that's what they were up to, in that community of devotees in this place called Vishnupur. So it's not a recommended process, but it does catch the imagination. Next Pandava Nirjala Karasi. So, the Goswamis, they have minimized their eating and their sleeping. And Prabhupada specifically mentions here they minimize sleep to 2 hours a day. So how do we apply that in our lives? we should do it in a sattvic way. So according to our bodily needs, we should not sleep to the extreme. We should not sleep, we should not deprive ourselves of sleep as well, that we are sleep deficient. But we should understand the need of our body. So the Goswamis, they had elevated themselves to such consciousness that they didn't require sleep. They transcended their bodies to the extent that 2 hours was enough for them. Prabhupada, pretty much. How many hours did Prabhupada sleep? 2 hours? Yeah. Prabhupada would go to sleep at around 10 and then he would be up at 12. And then he would have a rest, yeah, during the day. He'd stay up all night translating. We should understand the need of our body. We shouldn't sleep in excess. That is tamas. We shouldn't sleep. We shouldn't deprive ourselves of sleep either. That is rajas. Yeah. When you are in rajas, when you are overwhelmed by passion, you can't sleep. So many things to do, and you're just so wired, and you lie down, and your mind is, you know, churning, and too many ideas, and you get back up and check your email, write something down, and try to sleep again. And so, yeah, people who are too much in rajas, or there is anxiety, what's going to happen? What might go wrong? I might be losing my money. I might be, you know, someone might be trying. Too much anxiety, and people get insomnia. They're unable to sleep. They need pills to sleep. So we mustn't think that Krishna consciousness means that we become like that. So overworked and over... Well, overstrung, just so high strung in the name of Krishna consciousness. And we live in a rajasic way in the name of being fully committed and fully devoted. Sattva-guna is the most favorable to the practice of devotional service. So different bodies have different requirements. Generally, Ayurveda recommends 6 hours of sleep per day, 6 to 8 hours. Some bodies they need less, some bodies require more. So depending on your constitution, you should understand what your body needs. But then don't indulge in more than that. Don't, in the name of Krishna consciousness, deprive yourself either of the requirements of your body. Similarly with eating. Goswamis were eating very simply. Raghunath Das Goswami would just drink some buttermilk each day. As much buttermilk as could be contained in a, not even a leaf cup, there was a leaf, a certain leaf that has a kind of like a cup formation. It grows around Govardhan Hill. So the devotees would bring buttermilk in one of those leaves. Raghunath would take that and that was it for the day. Once the devotees, they discovered a particular one of those trees where the leaves were much bigger. So because they were concerned about Raghunath Das Goswami, so they brought, you know, that those bigger leaves, and they put the buttermilk in the bigger leaf. And they brought it to him, and he took that in his hands and threw it to the side. And the devotees thought, oh, he doesn't like that we've found the bigger leaf. Bigger leaf, and that wasn't the issue. Where did you get the leaf? And they said, we got it, you know, in this particular place on the side of Govardhan Hill. And he said, yes, Gauri Kund. I will not accept anything from that area. That's the place of Chandravali. Chandravali is Radha's rival. And so, so as an intimate servant of Sri Radha, Raghunath recognized those leaves and immediately dismissed them. He didn't want to have anything. How dare you bring me something from Gauri Kund? You bring me anything from Radha Kund, and we will take that on our heads. We will worship that. But anything from Gauri Kund, you keep it far away from us. And so the devotees, you know, attempts to trick him into taking more was defeated. But Prabhupada has given us the example for taking prasad. Prabhupada encouraged the devotees to take prasad nicely. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself showed that example. He would take prasad with the devotees, he would serve prasad to the devotees in a great festival. He would visit devotees' homes and accept prasad from them. He would serve. When he served the devotees, then sometimes the devotees felt that he was serving them much more than they could eat. Yeah. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu encouraged the devotees to take prasad. At the same time, he was also very pleased with Raghunath. We were explaining Raghunath drinking his buttermilk, but prior to moving to Vrindavan, Raghunath lived in Jagannath Puri. Chaitanya was very pleased when he heard how Raghunath had reduced his eating quite an extreme degree. Raghunath was a prince, in fact, and he minimized his eating to a great extent. But generally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu encouraged his devotees to take prasad, and similarly, Srila Prabhupada, he would cook. In the early days, he would cook for the devotees and serve the devotees prasadam with his own hand. Generally, when Prabhupada explains, regulate your eating as a devotee, he says, means don't eat anything that is not offered to Krishna. That's how he would explain that. Whatever is offered to Krishna, we take. At the same time, it's important to be healthy, to take prasad, which is healthy for your particular body type as well. Sometimes when devotees live in the temple and they're eating only mahaprasad, sometimes devotees will make a vow, I'll only eat what comes from Krishna's plate on the altar, which is a very laudable thing. That they make such a vrata. But then Krishna, what Krishna has on the altar is very opulent, very rich. Lots of ghee and sugar. And so in time the devotees find that their bodies are not able to digest and assimilate that mercy that they are receiving. And they become ill. And so Krishna, he can enjoy all of that very opulent food, but we are not so well endowed that our bodies can do that. And so whatever works for your body, to have a healthy functioning body, for your eating, for your sleeping. Devotees also reduce their defending. Prabhupada will give the example. The defending, you defend like Hanuman or Arjuna, they are defending Krishna. Not necessarily with bows and arrows and clubs, but you defend Krishna in this world philosophically. You teach Krishna consciousness. And similarly with mating. Mating is regulated within Grihastha Ashram for the procreation of children. And those children are born and welcomed into a loving family and raised with love. As an offering to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 10 children. I think 10. And those children, they're not born, they were not delivered by storks down a chimney. Generally, houses in India don't have chimneys. He engaged in mating. In a regulated way, and he had children. One amongst them, particularly, is one of the great acharyas of this world, that is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada, the great pioneer and reformer of Krishna consciousness in the modern age. And so that is glorious. That mating of the devotee when they have, when they bring such wonderful children into the world, that is glorious. And Krishna himself says, Kamosmi Bharatar Shabha. I am that sex. I am that mating. Dharma Virudo Bhuteshu, which is in accordance with these scriptural principles. So all of these things, they can be engaged in Krishna consciousness, regulated and engaged in Krishna consciousness. That is sudha sattva, that is pure goodness. And so we try to live a sattvic life that is engaged in Krishna's service. And that does not devour like a python, does not devour our existence, but rather delivers us from material existence. Sets us free when we engage the sattva guna in the service, in Krishna's service. That is bhakti yoga. And that will set us free from this material condition. That which is the cause of the disease, when applied therapeutically, becomes the cure. We have Dr. Carla here. That is Rupa Goswami. He gives that example. That which is the cause of the disease, when it, some people here might, what? As an example, yeah, snake venom. Or in Western medicine, then they use immunization. They'll give you a little bit of a disease in order to become that your body will build the antibodies and become resistant to that disease. Okay, so the python of sleep should be also engaged. In Krishna's service. Keeping a healthy body that we can engage in Krishna consciousness. That is glorious. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
As living spirit souls, like fully conscious, and how does the sleep take us away from that consciousness? And is it because the body is tired and that's why we're not able to cope? And then because soul needs a physical medium and then goes just along with the body.
Yeah.
And when the body is rejuvenated, then it's back into consciousness. Is that the right understanding?
Yeah, okay. Thank you for raising this point, because Prabhupada did discuss it in the purport and I forgot to address it. So when we sleep, then we lose consciousness. We become we identify with so many other things, so many other illusory realities. Prabhupada talks, and I wanted to speak about this, but I forgot about it. Prabhupada speaks about the night dream, where we might dream that we are a prince or being chased by, you know, military or whatever. So many different situations that we find are flying. I do a lot of flying in my sleep. So we're doing, yeah. So this, you know, alter reality of sleep, it's an illusory reality. And so when we're in that state of illusion, then in bhakti yoga we want to break free of illusion, become aware of our eternal spiritual nature, our eternal spiritual identity. So Prabhupada speaks about the night dream, where we have all of these, you know, illusory experiences. But then he says that, but in our conditioned state, even our wakeful state is a daydream. So night and daydream, both are states of illusion. I'm dreaming now that I'm a man of a certain age, and I'm, you know, in the middle of my life, and, you know, I'm at university or whatever. So that is a daydream in Prabhupada's explanation. And then at night I have another dream. I dream myself as a king or as a, you know, an acrobat or whatever it is. And so that's hyper-illusion. The illusion gets, you know, I'm in my sleep and I'm dreaming myself in this body, but in another illusory state. So it's an illusion of the illusion. Plato, in fact, he criticized music and drama. And when he described the ideal state, the ideal city-state, the republic, he had this dialogue, and he says, you know, what we'll do, we just take everything out and we start afresh. So how will we raise children? And he talks about that. And, you know, how will the king be? The king will be a philosopher king, like a Raja Rishi, an enlightened ruler. And so he, you know, reconstructs his ideal city. And then what about the poet, you know, the artist? As it, no, the artist will be kept outside of the city. And why? Because some enlightened artists will be allowed inside, but generally the artist or the poet will be kept out, because in this world we are in an illusion. We are in a state of forgetfulness of our spiritual nature. And then the poet comes along and sings or creates a drama, which is another illusion. So it's an illusion of the illusion. So it magnifies or multiplies the illusion through their art and music and so on. And so, and thereby increases the illusion. Therefore, the poet should be kept out of the city. And so, Prabhupada's point, yeah, of the night and the daydream is that at nighttime we're sleeping, in the daytime we're also in this dream state, dreaming that we are these bodies that we're whatever, you know, identities we've assumed in this life. But at night that gets, we get an illusion of the illusion. So some dreams, though, Prabhupada would say, and we have examples in our texts, they are, Prabhupada said, special. If you dream of the spiritual master, if you dream of Krishna, then that can... And we have the examples in our scriptures that those dreams, they're considered to be an actual experience of the Lord or of the spiritual master. So those are actually the reality. Indradumna Swami very frequently dreams of Prabhupada. He receives instructions. So that's not, Prabhupada said, that's not ordinary. I don't have those dreams. So those dreams that devotees might have, they're not like this other dream, but they are very vivid, very clear. Like yeah.
Lucid.
I beg your pardon?
Lucid.
Very lucid. Yeah, a very lucid experience. More than a dream, more like an experience that they have. Okay, so we're over time. Thank you all very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda, Ki Jai Tai Gaura Premanandini.